Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma and I'm a Senior Research Fellow at the Institute. I'm today joined by Mike Forward, who's also a Senior Research Fellow at the OIS, and we're going to discuss his latest paper, The Opportunities for Gas in Sub-Saharan Africa, which was recently published by the Institute. Mike, great to have you here. Welcome. We're actually in Oxford on a lovely sunny day, aren't we?
Yes, thank you very much, David. I'll get a suntan sitting
here. I think we will. Anyway, let's get to the paper. Your paper examines sub-Saharan Africa as a whole to assess the opportunities for gas in the power generation sector. Let's start by asking, how do you define sub-Saharan Africa, and what was the reason for carrying out this research at this time?
Yeah, I think sub-Saharan Africa is basically pretty much the whole of Africa, apart from what I would call the North African Mediterranean countries, mm-hmm. So Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya and Egypt. Right. They are very different from really the rest of Africa.
Right.
They're more European focused, mm-hmm. in that sort of area. There's been quite a lot of discussion about in the region as a new frontier for gas, whether
right.
it's an exporter or an importer,
mm-hmm.
But for gas demand, LNG in particular. And the research was carried out to test this proposition. There's been a lot of discussion about
it. Yeah. Well, so you felt it was quite timely to do it?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. It's a good topic to do, you know, yeah. And I think Africa's always an interesting continent.
I tell you what I was fascinated by reading your paper was that at first glance, coal is an important energy source for power generation in Africa, but when you exclude South Africa, Botswana, Zimbabwe, coal becomes almost negligible. Why is that?
Well, I think it's when you look at the statistics for Africa as a whole, then what you see is that coal is a dominant power generation fuel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically just in those three countries you mentioned. I mean,
right.
South Africa has vast coal reserves,
mm-hmm.
and the neighbouring countries have their own coal and import from South Africa as well. But outside these three, there are almost no coal reserves. So it's a very different picture if you exclude those three countries.
Mm.
And again, that's part of the reason for looking at the research.
Well, I think we'll come to South Africa
yeah.
later on in this podcast.
Yeah.
But so let's start with the kind of the major question of what are the prospects for natural gas in the region?
I mean, you've got a number of countries where gas is very important energy mix, in power especially. If you look at Cote d'Ivoire and Nigeria, they basically dominate the power sector there.
Right.
Based on the back of their own indigenous resources.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But also Tanzania and smaller countries like Gabon and Congo also have domestic gas reserves, and they're very important in the power sector there. On the other side, there are also a number of countries, like Mozambique, Tanzania, mm-hmm. Senegal, Mauritania, sitting on vast reserves.
Yes, yes.
Which are destined for export, but may help develop the domestic gas sector as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also, apart from the West African gas pipeline, which runs from Nigeria to moving to the west to Benin, Togo, and Ghana, there's
yeah.
very little gas trade across borders in the region.
Mm-hmm. And that's because there's very little infrastructure, I imagine.
It is, yes. I mean, the West African gas pipeline was built to evacuate gas from Nigeria to its neighbouring countries.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been beset by supply problems from Nigeria, mm-hmm. failing to supply the contracted volumes,
mm-hmm.
and in part non-payment by Ghana.
Yeah.
So it's been a real issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's been a lot of discussion about LNG imports. You know, you can't read a trade magazine without another idea for some LNG importing scheme in the region.
Yeah.
And there are also the opportunities for gas to displace oil in the power generation sector.
Right, right.
Because if you do exclude the three countries at the bottom with the coal reserves,
mm-hmm.
and the coal-fired generation, then basically, if they're not burning gas, they're either burning oil or it's hydro.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Yes,
there's very little renewables currently in the region.
That's it. Well, I'm sure we'll come to that
yeah,
later
yeah.
on in a discussion, but let's talk about the disparity between electrical consumption in different countries. You know, how does usage in Africa compare to other countries then?
It's very low. I mean, we use some numbers here. It won't mean much without comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
But for the whole of the region, then total electricity consumption is only about 0.53 megawatt hours per head.
Mm.
And South Africa is by far the largest,
yeah.
at 4.5 megawatt hours per head.
So
if South Africa is excluded, then average consumption drops to about 0.24 megawatt hours per
head.
And
how does that compare to other countries outside of Africa?
I mean, you look at a developing country like Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
One of the Asian tigers, that had consumption of 1.64 megawatt hours
Gosh,
per head.
Gosh, it is different. That's a huge, about 20%, isn't it?
It's a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, if sub-Saharan Africa, excluding South Africa, achieved
yeah.
the same level consumption per head as Vietnam, then total electricity generation would need to rise seven times. which is enormous.
That is enormous, yes, and actually it's almost too much of a challenge, isn't it?
Really? It is, yes. But it's so there's a lot of opportunity there, that's what we're saying.
Okay, and so why has coal therefore been such an important growth factor for non-African countries? You know, when you said that the African countries, some of them have got their own coal resources.
Well, even if you look at the developed OECD countries and Asian economies, then coal in power, whether it's in the US or Europe or Asia, started with indigenous coal reserves.
Yeah.
It was the first port of call, if you like, for power generation.
Yes.
So as those countries developed their power industry based on indigenous reserves, and as those have been depleted, they started to import, and hence the coal trade. Yeah. So fundamentally, it comes from having your own indigenous reserves.
And because, of course, coal is an energy source, it's so difficult to move, you develop your domestic and your local markets first.
Yeah. And as we said, this is not the case in sub-Saharan Africa outside those three countries.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Well, look, your paper, let's move on and talk about Power Africa programme. You know, your paper discusses the programme. Can you tell us, you know, about that?
Yeah, Power Africa is a big USAID,
okay,
International Development Programme.
Yep.
Which is looking to bring electricity to sub-Saharan Africa. Its goal is to add more than 30,000 megawatts of cleaner, more efficient electricity generation capacity and 60 million new home and business connections. A lot of it is not necessarily about providing funds for projects, but trying to make projects work on our public-private partnership, providing advice and support. And
so it's a structuring type of program.
Yeah, it's establishing very attractive frameworks. I mean, there's quite a lot of money to be spent, but it is enabling projects. It's a bit like what some countries, like, you know, like what the World Bank do and other aid-funded agencies. Renewables are a very big focus, but they're also supporting quite a lot of gas-fired power as well. So it's not just a renewables-focused program.
Interesting. And, well, that raises another point, which, of course, is the demand profile for power. You know, so how does this determine the power generation that is required then?
Well, a lot of the potential growth in power demand is about electrifying communities where no electricity exists.
Right.
So that's really the focus of it. But also improving reliability in the current systems, so the end users don't need to rely so much on backup diesel generation.
Right.
I mean, I'll go to Africa quite a lot.
Yeah.
And luckily you stay in hotels where the power never goes off, but that's largely because they've got their own diesel generators.
It wasn't like that before, was it?
No, it wasn't. Yeah. I mean,
so things are impressive. But solar, I see advertisements on the television, and I see read reports about the growth of renewables. Is gas competing with renewables, or
Only partly. I mean, I think the need for power in the region is so big.
Yeah.
There's plenty of room for both renewables and gas.
Mm-hmm.
You get this sevenfold increase in electricity generation, then it's kind of all of the above option. It's not a either or.
Mm-hmm.
And gas-fired power has an advantage of scale. You can build big gas-fired power generations and bring on a lot of power at once.
Mm-hmm.
There's also scope for what people call distributed power generation, which includes mini-grids.
Right.
And they are banks of batteries, often charged by solar arrays.
Yeah.
They can provide round-the-clock electricity, capable of powering machinery, irrigation systems and freezers, especially in remote rural communities, as well as lighting. They are currently expensive, but they could become cheaper as more common and are well placed for rural electrification, where it can be expensive to connect to the main grid.
Yeah.
They're becoming more popular in Asia, particularly India. India has the same problems.
Right.
And also in some of the African countries, including Mozambique, Nigeria and Togo, are all experimenting with these.
That's interesting because, of course, as you quite rightly said at the beginning, it's the lack of infrastructure, isn't it, that really...
Fundamentally,
there. So, the concept of setting up these independent grids, maybe linking them at a later date might be a good one. But how does this and the move to renewables fit with the environmental COP targets? Is that an important factor, or is it just a side issue?
I mean, I think for certainly Power Africa and some of the governments, that's certainly part of the drive on renewables, but it's also, I think it's more simply just bringing electricity to the population in a clean way. So it's, the COP targets are important, but electrification is the key.
So it's a resultant, is it really? Yes, exactly right. Yeah. Well, I certainly hope it works out. Well, look, why don't we talk now? We talked about power, but let's talk now about gas demand, specifically in power in sub-Saharan Africa. And your paper, which I may say I really enjoyed reading, divides up countries on the basis of domestic gas, coal-dominated LNG, and gas by wire. So the question is, how important will LNG be, or will growth be based on pipeline gas or gas by wire?
I think when you've got domestic gas reserves, then that's always going to be the starting point for providing fuel to power generation.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take Cote d'Ivoire as an example. I mean, they're almost all gas-fired generation, apart from a little bit of hydro.
Right.
But the domestic reserves are not sufficient to supply the demand. The demand is growing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking to import LNG. Also in neighbouring Ghana, they've started importing gas by pipeline from Nigeria before they developed their own reserves. But are now increasingly using their own discovered reserves, and may also look to import LNG because demand is rising so rapidly.
Right.
I think in terms of pipeline projects to internet countries, either view, it seems, despite the fact it looks attractive, it seems unlikely,
yeah.
as they have to have sufficient gas to export for a long period of time,
yeah.
and there's not so many countries who have that. And the experience, sadly, of the West African gas pipeline, with Nigeria constantly failing to supply the contracted volumes,
right.
and Ghana failing to pay, is like to put many.
So reliability is obviously key, isn't it? So you can't rely on the supply. You're not going to. You'll go take an LNG, which gives an alternative supply rather than a pipeline link.
Yeah, I think LNG presents a much lower cost and less risky alternative to pipeline imports.
Yeah.
It's also more convenient for greenfield sites if you've got a coastline.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk for a minute about, specifically, you know, about the new huge gas reserve finds which you referred to in Mozambique, Tanzania, Cameroon, Senegal and Mauritania, which are all being considered or are being developed as an LNG export facilities. And of course, we've already got Nigeria, Equatorial Guinea, Angola as well. So, you know, will this help to grow gas in the energy mix in Africa?
I think it will. I mean, Nigeria is almost like a mature market now. That's got loads of gas reserves, developed for export, and almost all their gas power generation is gas-fired.
But it's a mature... Oh, I see. You're saying it's a mature with a domestic market as well as export market.
Yeah, it's got a large domestic market. I mean, they can't get enough gas for their power, basically.
Right, okay. So you prefer to export for every...
Yeah, export would provide you with a hard currency.
Right, got it. Okay,
Then there's issues of, you know, non-payment of bills in Nigeria as well.
Yeah.
But I think Mozambique and Tanzania provide, because of their vast size of reserves, provide the best opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But also on a smaller scale, countries like Angola, Cameroon, Senegal and Mauritania as well.
Mm.
For imports, I mean... LNG in particular, I think that's the focus. South Africa probably tops the list, the sheer size.
Yeah.
But you also got Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, have substantial growth prospects, plus Benin and Togo in small in that same West African area. There are also some speculative options out there, which people talked about, like Kenya, Mauritius, Namibia and Sudan.
Yeah.
I think we'd all volunteer to go to Mauritius to investigate that opportunity.
I'll follow that one as well. I'll be on the team. But one thing, of course, that's changing is that, you know, we are expecting at some point in the near future the first FID in Mozambique. You know, do you think that having an LNG supply source on the east coast or southeast coast of the country could actually develop new markets?
I think they'll be focused on LNG exports probably to the more commercial, vast Asian and European markets, as well as domestic use.
Right.
So they're not going to build them just to supply local markets.
Right.
They're going to be built to export to
the high-value
markets.
The hard revenue. It's just hard revenue.
But once those projects are off the ground, then there's always some volumes available for more local markets. If you basically finance the project by selling to the high-value markets.
Yes, exactly. Of course, the other high value markets, if they're going to willing to pay more, it'll be interesting to see what the obligation is to sell locally. Why do we talk about infrastructure? Because you've referred to that as a challenge, and we've talked about gas by wire. And so I'm wondering, is this the optimum way to distribute energy? And basically, who is going to build the infrastructure?
No, gas by wire is not optimum at all, but it's more of a niche market for being able to effectively export virtual gas from the coastal countries where you can bring imports in, export surplus electricity to landlocked neighbours. There's actually quite a lot of interconnection in the region, especially in the ECOWAS West African countries.
Right, right.
I mean, Ghana already exports electricity to Burkina Faso and Cote d'Ivoire to Mali, so the infrastructure is already there. And there are other power pools in East Africa, Southern Africa as well. So that's surprisingly well connected.
Mm.
You could do with more connection.
Yeah.
But it's not quite as bad as people might think.
Well, it's interesting because we hear a lot about Chinese investment in the African subcontinent. Mm. You know, do you think this will have a long-term impact on energy in the region as one country funding a lot of the investments?
I mean, China's investing in a whole range of industries,
right?
Apart from energy. I mean, I was in Nigeria a couple of weeks ago, flying to Abuja Airport, and the Chinese are building a big new terminal there. So,
yeah.
But I think the Chinese are involved with the energy side, but I think actually more importantly is the aid agencies, the World Bank and USAID.
Okay.
I think they're heavily involved. It might be probably more important than China.
Okay, it's interesting because there's obviously, you know, we haven't talked about the P word, the politics word, but there's obviously, you know, a key aim of many countries, the large companies, to get a political position in the country and may use aid to do that. Well, let's just talk, you know, we have briefly talked about South Africa. And of course, one thing you've identified is it's very different from the rest of sub-Saharan Africa in terms simply of its economic development and also its heavy use of coal and power generation, but it's still short of power. So why is that?
I think it's just its size and the use of coal. It's, there are many political issues and the problems of power shortages in such a large country. However, it has, you know, recently in September 2018, published its long, much-delayed integrated resource plan.
Right.
And this suggested that gas-fired power will become increasingly important in the mix,
mm-hmm.
initially driven by LNG imports, but they have some, you know, prospects of shale gas as well there.
Right.
However, it's still looking sort of 6-7 years out, unlikely to be developed before 2025.
Mm.
But by 2030, I mean, their plan, you could be looking at gas demand and imports of some 10 BCM a year.
Wow.
Which in African terms, or sub-Saharan African terms, is quite large.
Yes. But is that going to materialise? Because, you know, we could have had this same interview maybe 5 years ago and you could have given me the similar numbers, but they haven't materialised. Have things fundamentally changed? It gives you greater optimism now?
I think this is part of this integrated resource plan.
Right.
Because there was a lot of talk from the ministry and various investors about how things might work. There was no sort of kind of coherent plan to it.
Right.
Now there seems to be a sort of coherent plan, and they are moving on with it, and they are being supported by the aid agencies as well.
Okay. But again, you've said aid is obviously important. Isn't one thing that's also a bit of a blocker is gas pricing in the region? You know, is there a common model that's being used?
No, as with lots of regions, there is no common model.
That doesn't surprise me.
I mean, there's quite a lot of regulated pricing,
yeah.
especially in countries where you've literally just got a domestic source of supply and domestic source of demand and no trade, basically. Yeah. However, not all of these actually are subsidised or below-cost pricing. And as the IGU survey, which I'm involved with, has shown the move away.
How many years have you been involved in that?
Since 2006.
So you could call yourself a bit of an expert on this.
Yeah, 10 years, yeah. I can remember all the numbers, sadly. Yeah.
So from your expert position, you know, is this one where, you know, it's a subsidy area or not? You're saying it's not?
Not as much as you might think. I think
importing
countries are effectively playing market prices, whether oil linked or not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cote d'Ivoire is a good example of one country where there's been domestic gas industry supply and demand, and the price have always been set at market levels.
Mm-hmm.
There's no attempt to kind of subsidise on that basis.
Mm-hmm.
And more recently, Nigeria, you know, 8-9 years ago, it used to be 10 cents a million BTU.
And
now the market prices are up over $3, which it sounds low, but in Nigerian terms, it is economic for many investors.
They
have more economic prices now.
That's interesting. Well, why don't we talk about the issues and challenges of increasing gas's share in the power generation market? What are these, and you know, what are kind of the country level issues and the challenges that have to be resolved?
I think many of the problems are actually less in the gas sector and more in the electricity sector itself.
Right.
Where you've got real issues of quality, reliability.
Yeah.
Tariff levels, collecting the money, credit worthiness, obvious issue in some of these countries.
Right.
And in many countries, a lack of a proper regulatory framework, and apart from all the geopolitical issues.
There's an awful lot of challenges you listed there,
yes,
Mike.
Yeah. If you look at almost all the countries in the region, collect less cash than their operating capital expenditures.
Right.
And
okay.
It's partly because tariffs are low, partly because they're not collecting the money.
Right.
In fact, the only country which appears to collect enough cash to cover its costs is Uganda. which actually is the only country with a liberalised electricity market and multiply PPs. So maybe there's a lesson
there. There might be a lesson there, yes.
But we should not extrapolate from one example.
No, let's not do that. But so what you've really given me, the overview, is there are some, it's regulatory, really, that's governmental issues. But what about project level? Are there any specific project level issues?
I think for gas import projects, especially LNG, I think there's much less than at the country level.
Right.
One advantage of LNG imports is that they're much like oil imports, in that if a tanker is not paid for, then it's the last tanker the country will get.
Mm-hmm.
So you're much less of a payment issue, I think, with LNG imports, mm-hmm. than you would say with a pipeline system where you've locked into the infrastructure.
Right.
And you have to, if you don't pay, then you can't stop sending the gas.
No.
For a long time, otherwise you go bust.
There you go.
The LNG imports is different.
So yeah, exactly. So there's a mutual dependence, isn't there, really?
Yeah.
Which is actually how that's how the gas business has been developed globally, isn't it?
Mutually assured destruction, basically.
Oh, I thought you were being optimistic. Now you're not being so. Well, look. So where are the good opportunities? You know,
I think we split them into those with domestic reserves. Then obviously countries like Nigeria, still growth. Mozambique, Tanzania.
Yeah.
Plus at lower volumes, you've got Angola, Cameroon, Senegal, Mauritania.
Right.
For LNG imports, I think South Africa tops the list.
Really, still?
Yes. You see its size.
Yeah.
Then possibly Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire, and then the more speculative options we've talked about before on the East Coast.
But it does need, of course, some project structuring to be able to do that. You know, but something we said right at the beginning, it is domestic gas, and also domestic coal we talked about, that's been the foundation of gas demand growth. You know, do you think it's going to be a continuing trend, or are we going to shift to imports of LNG and pipeline gas?
I think in part, yes, it has to be domestic gas reserves, but I think those countries will join the LNG club, as well as the existing LNG exporters.
Yeah.
And as we said, there's potential LNG imports in a number of countries.
It's interesting because, of course, floating storage and regas units and the ability to get them in at a relatively economic cost very quickly, and linking that to power in some way, seems to be a solution, doesn't it?
In fact, pretty much most of the countries are looking at FSRUs.
It is, that is it.
Certainly in Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire and possibly Benin. A lot of countries are looking at FSRUs as a quick way to get them in.
It is a huge continent, though, isn't it? When we glibly talk about the East and the West Coast, but, you know, it's a vast continent.
It is. It's I think there's a question on a quiz. There's 20% of the world's land areas in Africa.
Yes, exactly.
Which is enormous.
And of course, but by definition of gas, of course, and particularly LNG, it's going to be the coastal regions, so it's the inside the country ones as well. But
it has lots of coastlines,
I suppose. It does have a lot of coastlines, I'll give you that. And renewables. No, let's not dismiss that. We talked about it briefly earlier on. You know, are renewables going to be important, do you think, in the growth in Africa for the environment or for economics?
It's both, I think, really. Renewables, obviously, environmentally very good, but on their own, they cannot meet the demands for electricity growth.
No.
It's not possible. And that is where gas can have a key role.
But they cannot meet the demand growth for a base load or for the fact that renewables go up and down, up and down. Because you said earlier on, in small grids, you can have batteries, things like that. So it's a different challenge.
I think it's just the sheer size
of
renewables you need to get a fivefold increase in electricity
generation. You'll be very optimistic. I love this, because we've talked about Africa, as I said earlier on, for years. Yeah. Well, look, why don't we finish up with just kind of, you know, with really asking you, you know, where's this all going to end up? You know, what is going to happen with gas in this particular region?
I think you've got positive demand growth in countries with very large levels of reserves.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned before, Nigeria. The new West African exporters, Senegal, Mauritania, Mozambique, Tanzania.
Yeah.
But a lot of the growth will depend on when they develop their energy exports.
Okay.
In East Africa and the Senegal area.
Yeah.
You've got a number of LNG import projects, but the move towards multiple countries importing in the region is still prospective.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by the mid-2020s it will have changed.
You're right.
You may have Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Namibia, South Africa, and Mauritius being the most likely projects.
Yes.
But it's not going to happen overnight. So you're always kind of 2 years away from a project happening, basically.
My optimism's disappearing here, Mike. I was optimistic before that.
Yeah. But I think it would be, if they come on in sort of the 2024-2025 period, then you've got a lot of export projects in the region, which will be well placed to supply small volumes to those countries.
Yeah.
So the timing is quite good.
Mm.
But you're not really going to take FID on an LNG export project to feed the African market. it's nice little incremental opportunities on the top.
Well, I think that's a good place to end up on. Well, Mike, thank you very much for your time. As always, I've really enjoyed our conversation that builds upon your paper, Opportunities for Gas in Sub-Saharan Africa, that can be found at our website, www.oxfordenergy.org, where you can find all our podcasts in the multimedia folder and other papers published by the Institute. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, and thank you and goodbye to everyone.